Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and Associate Director of Research at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar El-Tarai, our U.S. Director of Research. Together, we'll share the latest news and trends in the U.S. commercial real estate market. Omar, it's great to be with you. What is on our agenda today?
So we'll first kick off with some recent macro releases and kind of set the stage for 2025. And then we'll touch on some of what's happened in the capital markets since we started the year. And finally, we'll end the episode with a number of key themes as we proceed further into 2025, some of which we picked up from the recent CREFC conference in Miami and others that are just on our radar. But to kick it off, the first macro report that we wanted to highlight was the January edition of the Federal Reserve's Beige Book, which was released on January 15th. The report captured some emerging optimism about 2025, though the contacts that are really cited and serve as the basis for the Beige Book noted a number of policy-related concerns that really tempered their expectations of what the business and overall market environment would look like going through 2025. So at the macro level, economic activity increased slightly to moderately across the 12 Federal Reserve districts. Consumer spending increased moderately. That was driven by holiday sales really exceeding expectations. And many of the contacts across the different districts noted that the banking sector saw some modest loan growth and overall stable asset quality. So overall, those are pretty high level, but solid takeaways. On the employment front, employment increased slightly in six districts and remained unchanged in the other six. Healthcare and service industries continued to see positive job growth, while wage growth picked up to a moderate pace in most districts. Now, prices, read this almost as inflation, also was reported to have increased modestly overall. If you go up the supply chain, input costs rose modestly, even though there was some relief on fuel and energy costs, which were noted in some of the districts. And a number of contacts noted that they expect to see prices continue rising through 2025. Particularly, there was uncertainty noted around the potential impact of the proposed tariffs. Now, digging into just the real estate and CRE nuggets that came from the report, construction activity saw some, but a very small improvement from the prior report, which was in December of 2024. Also noted in the report, commercial real estate markets showed slight improvement overall, marking the first increase after a long period of decline. And some markets saw a push to close deals before 2024 year end. There were some nuggets of positivity in terms of transaction activity for commercial real estate. Any call out for office was generally negative or still, beaten down. This was coupled with the fact that there's still sluggish demand for office space across pretty much the entire nation. On the industrial side, industrial conditions were noted to be generally healthy, though there were some signs of softening across the regions, and industrial rents rose modestly in some areas. So lukewarm, really. Multifamily vacancy rates increased in some markets. But there was a call out specifically in Dallas that apartment operators or owners were focusing on maintaining occupancy over raising rents. So they were foregoing raising rents to just keep vacancy low. And finally, on the retail front, markets across the nation saw some improvements, but these were noted particularly where there was commentary around an uptick in tourism. And retail leasing activity was broadly described as stable across many districts. I know that was a lot. And while the Beige Book really is qualitative in nature, and so they're using words like moderately or slightly, I very much like this report because it does provide color to what many business leaders and investors are seeing and watching as they digest and try to make decisions about where they should allocate their attention and capital. And in the latest Beige Book, while there was optimism for the year ahead, there really were quite a few lingering questions surrounding potential policy changes, overall economic growth, and really inflation potentially coming back and complicating outlooks. Elevated rates have really put a damper on financing across the economy and commercial real estate markets, whether that's new construction or investment and transaction activity and valuation. Concerns that progress on inflation or on bringing inflation down is stalling, or that potential policy changes may bring a renewed resurgence of rising inflation, these really make it difficult for the business leaders to decide where and when they should be allocating capital. And this is why the markets really rallied when the CPI report was released on January 15th, as it showed that core CPI rose 0.2% in December over November, after rising 0.3% in each of the four previous months. So this positive progress on core CPI was really met with a lot of enthusiasm by the markets. And on the release of the CPI report, the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury security fell 12 basis points in the day, and the U.S. equity markets rallied 1.8% on the day. So it's just the start of a new year. The Beige Book kind of recaps where we were coming into it. And on the first major economic release, the markets really reacted to that positively, that inflation, or at least 1 month of inflation data, is showing that there is continued progress there. And Cole, I know that you were paying attention to another big report that really captures quite a bit of sentiment and hard quantitative data. What were you reading?
Yeah, so I think this pairs well with what you were talking about. The NFIB Small Business Optimism Index actually really quantifies a lot of the stuff you were talking about from the Beige Book contacts. So this is the National Federation of Independent Business Small Business Optimism Index. It's effectively a series of questions to business owners of establishments of 50 people or fewer, 50 employees or fewer. And they ask all kinds of questions from, are you planning on making capital outlays? Are you planning on hiring? Do you have a job posting? And then there's also some questions about, do you expect conditions to be better? Do you expect the economy to improve? And so they combine all these into the optimism index. This really surged after the election. And now, as of December, it's at its highest level since October of 2018. So up 3.4 points from November to December. It's now at 105.1. And so I think what this shows is that optimism is continuing to build after the election, especially now that the inauguration has passed. President Trump is pledging deregulation and lower taxes, which I think small business owners are quite happy about. But they've reported reduced uncertainty about the economy's direction. They're certain that the economy is going to improve. They have a more positive outlook for business conditions, heightened expectations for sales. So a lot of positive stuff in there. 27% say they plan to make capital outlays within the next 6 months. So a third of businesses, you know, it's asking if they're going to do it, not how much capital they're going to expend, but seems like a good sign. So this is the highest percentage since January of 2022. Now, the top concern of respondents is still inflation. So 20% of business owners say that's their top issue. I'd say one thing that could really throw a wrench into some of the optimism, President Trump's proposed tariffs. These are, you know, inherently inflationary. I expect to see this concern linger for some time. So that will be really interesting. So one other piece of data that I was looking at was around housing. So the census released their monthly report on building permits and housing starts. And a really, really interesting piece was the multifamily housing starts actually surged in December, up 58.9% month over month. That's a huge increase. And so one of the things that I wanted to look at, if you look at the unadjusted data, it actually paints a much more tempered picture of multifamily housing starts, which we know broadly have been declining after a huge surge in 2021 and 2022. And if you were just to look at the unadjusted data, you would see that there's actually a yearly decline of 2.7%. So I think there's still a lot of volatility in multifamily construction activity, serious questions about the sustainability of the surge that was captured in the seasonally adjusted data. In addition, single family sector continues to face some challenges. Permits are declining on an annual basis and actually have every month since May of 2024. And the declines have actually accelerated in recent months. So I think that you may expect to see some constraints on the future single family housing supply, which in turn could bolster multifamily demand. So housing options are still pretty tight. Affordability concerns persist. And so I think there's a lot to keep a lookout on for the next couple of months of housing data. And then lastly, I wanted to touch on retail sales data. This is really interesting. So Census Bureau released its advanced monthly report on retail and food service sales activity for the month of December on January 16th. So the report said that sales rose 0.4% month over month and 3.9% year over year to $729 billion. Now, a couple things to keep in note here. The retail sales for December showed a 0.7% increase in the control group, which actually removes automobiles and building materials. But there's something to keep in mind here, and that's firstly that retail sales data is not adjusted for inflation. So some of the increase could actually just be higher prices. And then second, it's possible that consumers pulled forward purchases ahead of potential tariff implementation, which is slated to impact a whole range of goods, especially electronics and furniture, which actually showed some huge jumps year over year, 5.8 and 8.4%. So one other thing I wanted to call out, non-store retailers are a bright spot. They're growing at 6%, or purchases are growing 6% annually. Definitely a tailwind for industrial warehouse demand. I think supply chains are going to evolve to, meet some of the needs of a lot of online shopping giants. And then on the opposite side of this question, some segments of traditional retail are really struggling. So department store sales actually declined on an annual basis, 1.8%. And they've declined in all but 2 months since February of 2023. I think you can pair this with one recent announcement just on January 9th. Macy's actually announced that they were going to close 66 locations in 2025 and indicated that they may actually close more. So a lot of interesting stuff to look at here, you know, some quantitative and qualitative data. But I think retail sales and housing data is something we'll need to keep an eye out on as we kind of enter 2025.
Absolutely. I think the position A financial strength and position of the consumer was a major theme, and I would say one of the contentious points going into 2024 around whether the bottom was going to fall out of consumer spending. And I think anybody who was calling that effectively got that wrong, and that really kept overall economic growth buzzing along. And now that's coupled with the positive sentiment from whether you're seeing it in the Beige Book or whether you're seeing that uptick in the small business survey. But looking beyond a few of these individual reports and the market reaction, if you were looking at how the capital markets have performed so far over the first 20 or so days of January and of 2025, the optimism is definitely winning over any sort of sense of caution. So the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury security as of recording on Tuesday, January 21, is 4.57%. This is really unchanged from the start of the year and 23 basis points below the peak that it hit in mid-January or just last week. Corporate credit spreads remain near historic tights, and the yield curve, which became positively sloped in December, remains so after being inverted really since 2022, depending on what pair you're looking at, the 10 and 2 year, the 10 and 3 month, or the 10 and the Fed funds rate. And, you know, the inverted yield curve was historically used as an indicator of market disruption ahead. So seeing that leave the territory of inversion territory and become positively sloped is generally a positive signal. So if that's what's happening in the debt markets, taking a look at, you know, year-to-date equity performance, U.S. equity markets, or if you look at the major indices, shares are up more than 3%. And it really led by energy and material sectors. In the public real estate security space, REITs continued to lag the broad market on really the higher for longer capital concerns. And I would say that there's still some lingering kind of skepticism around that sector versus others in terms of earning potential. But the REITs, even though they are lagging the broad market, they're still in positive territory year to date. And across the sectors of equity REITs, timber, telecom, and industrial are leading so far in January, while mortgage REITs are also beating the broad REIT aggregate year to date, which mortgage REITs have had a pretty tough last 2 years. And so seeing them turn positive, at least in the first couple weeks of the year, is I think, a good sign for them. But also coming out of the public markets, earnings season really kick off as companies are reporting their Q4 2024 and their full year 2024 results. And so far, the earnings have really also fueled kind of those positive vibes for 25. The first kind of batch of earnings that we saw come out were coming from some of the largest banks. And some of the themes that really emerged from those earnings calls and reports included record earnings being reported for 2024. And this jump in net income was really supported by a spike in investment banking fee revenue from a surge in large deal-making activity, strong asset growth in wealth and asset management lines of business, rising net interest income really earned from their loan book amidst the higher rate environment, and finally, continued progress across many of the banks that have reported in managing their cost ratios down and really finding efficiency amidst still above trend inflation. So combined with the strong performance of the largest banks, the expected rollback of potentially burdensome regulatory costs that really, you know, we talked about on a number of podcasts, but otherwise, if you're paying attention to real estate or banking, it would have been hard to avoid through 2023 and 2024. A lot of that is a potential extra regulation and regulatory burden is expected to either be postponed or canceled, which with the new Trump administration, which really should bode well for the largest banks. And on top of the banks, we also saw some of the asset managers and custodian banks, which kind of often sit in this territory that's between asset management and the large universal banks. They also reported positive fourth quarter and full year 2024 results. A lot of the positivity and the beats in terms of results was driven by higher fee revenue, which was supported by growing AUM or assets under management, which was largely either inflows that they earned from competitors, but also just very strong market performance, particularly in equities. In these calls, there are a few common themes. So a greater focus towards setting up either alternative investment platforms or really focusing on alternative investments. This is a theme that I think is growing. This is not the first time that the alts have been an area of exploration and excitement for these large institutions. But many of the asset managers are seeing this as an area of growth because it's where they can put capital to work in the private markets, So that's including infrastructure and CRE and anything that lives kind of between infrastructure and CRE, think data centers. They view this as a big opportunity, not only for putting their institutional capital to work, but also to invest on behalf of or find ways of making this accessible to their retail clients. And so I think the data centers and kind of tech investment is kind of a big overlap between private markets, infrastructure, and commercial real estate. And then layer on top of that, there's a major trend towards a energy transformation within the U.S. I think that that is all kind of a sweet spot that's getting a lot of attention and an area of growth that is popping up on some of these calls and garnering a lot of attention as an area of opportunity. But also, there was a call out of customizing solutions for their clients. And I'm curious to see where this kind of plays out. I think this is partially driven by the kind of great wealth transfer, which is stemming from the demographic and financial shift as baby boomers really retire and age and ultimately will transfer wealth to younger generations. But I think that the way that many of these firms are talking, I would not be shocked really to see some sort of innovative product or new way of approaching investment vehicles over the next few years, because this is something that they want to do at an institutional level, but be able to cater to retail clients. I think it's all fascinating, but ultimately, if you take away from just kind of like the financials reporting earnings so far, a lot of optimism driven on the tailwinds of very strong growth through 2024 and looking for opportunities in 2025 where they can put their capital to work.
I was just thinking, you know, you said the word optimism, and yeah. I know that that's going to come up in your next segment here, because we did just get back from the Commercial Real Estate Finance Council conference in Miami. Did you take anything else away from the debt side? I know you were covering banks, you know, just a minute ago, but I think you got a couple of things here.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think the term cautious optimism was the theme of the CREFC conference, it seemed like. It popped up on almost all the panels and seems to be the consensus view of what lays ahead in 2025, at least for the CRE financing environment. I think this is driven by generally positive economic data, but then also by the need to put capital to work. And the kind of demand for capital, whether that's putting it to work from the lender side or, you know, the demand for capital from the borrower side. And it all comes on the backdrop of still, for the most part, sound CRE operating fundamentals. Yes, there are certain sectors and certain markets that have faced a few more challenges, but overall, the theme was optimism. And then I would say the cautious qualifier was put onto the term because there are still a lot of questions that are outstanding and have yet to be answered that I think 2025 will address, and we will get more certainty there. But right now, I think there's a bit of caveating that optimism with caution. But another theme that seemed to emerge from the conference was that there's this perception that the higher for longer narrative and the impact of a higher rate environment is finally either being fully digested in some parts of the CRE market, but also is becoming very much a reality that is settling in. And so there's a sense of acceptance of where rates are. Yes, they could move, but generally the expectation is that they're not going to move fast one way or the other, and ultimately that the valuation declines that we've seen really since rate hikes started probably 20 months ago have, you know, they've largely been incorporated into many valuations, and that the market is starting to see an inflection point. And that gives confidence that those that are well-positioned or have portfolios that are well-positioned with strong performing assets will be able to get the financing that they need. And those that maybe were hoping for a rapid rate cut, well, they have gotten rid of those hopes, and those hopes have kind of been replaced with the reality of this higher cost of capital. And so there was an expectation that more transactions will happen, that refinancing will take place, and that valuations, whether you like them or not, have actually found some kind of solid ground. But, you know, that wasn't the only issue that popped up and was like a common theme. I think another major issue happened to be insurance. I think this was top of mind given the horrific LA wildfires, but also it's becoming more and more of a challenge for not only lenders, but for owners, and is a big area of uncertainty going forward because it calls to question, if you can't get insurance, you're going to have a tough time getting lending. And even if you can get insurance, the uncertainty around what the cost of that insurance will be is complicating some of those operator decisions. But Cole, I know that there were a number of common themes that you heard and other themes that you would call out for 2025. What are those?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think the one big takeaway I had from CREFC, at least last year, everybody was waiting on clarity on interest rates. It's, you know, debatable whether we have much of that right now. But now it seems like folks are actually waiting for clarity on legislative and regulatory priorities of the incoming administration, the new Congress. And so I guess the good news is that we have some. As of this recording, the inauguration was one day ago, January 20th. And I know that we'll learn a lot more about the administration's priority in the next, say, 98 days or 99 if you include today. But there have been a lot of things that are actually relevant to CRE that have been mentioned. So a flurry of things that President Trump has discussed in the last few days that have come up. The renewal of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 is one. Another, and mind you, these are in no particular order. These are just what came to mind. But via executive order, the president ordered most federal workers back to the office. In addition, he signaled that he would like to sell up to 2/3 of federally owned office space, which is an immense amount of office that'll come to the market. He also indicated that he plans to ramp up deportations of illegal immigrants, who we know make up a large portion of the construction force, particularly for CRE in addition to single family housing. He also mentioned up to 25% tariffs on goods from Mexico and Canada. You know, the goal is to reshore American manufacturing, but ultimately we know in the short term, this may cause some supply chain turmoil. Could be really interesting to see what this means for the industrial space. And in addition, could spike fears related to the return of inflation, which is going to have all kinds of impacts for our industry. So those were some of the things that he mentioned, but there have also been two other items I think that are relevant to us. One is the Federal Housing Finance Agency. So President Trump recently picked Bill Pulte, kind of a PE veteran, and actually the grandson of a housing developer, William Pulte, to run the FHFA. For those folks who may not know, they are the agency that regulates Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. His decision to choose Mr. Pulte was actually lauded by many in the housing space, such as the National Association of Home Builders and the Mortgage Bankers Association. The big thing here is there's been a lot of discussion, and it has been mentioned as a priority, about the privatization of Fannie and Freddie. So these have been under government conservatorship since 2008, and it is evident that privatization has some bipartisan support. So between the selection of a new head of the FHFA and some discussions about coming out of conservatorship, it'll be interesting to see how the push goes. I think we'll learn about it a lot more in the next few weeks. And then lastly, President Trump nominated Scott Turner to lead the Department of Housing and Urban Development. He would be the first HUD secretary to have worked in the private housing space as a developer. I wanted to call out a few things from his first hearing, which was last week, actually before the inauguration. Mr. Turner said he wants to revise the Section 8 voucher program to be easier for landlords to use. He mentioned that he wants to work with states to ease housing regulations or barriers to constructing housing. He expressed interest in building housing forms of all types, not just single family and your traditional multifamily, but also townhomes and kind of everything else in between. In addition, he supports renewing the Opportunity Zone program, which is part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act 2017. So it might be part of the discussion in the renewal. And then I wanted to call out one other thing from that hearing. So when we talk about legislative priorities, found this one nugget really interesting. Senator Kennedy of Louisiana pitched during the hearing an idea of a requirement that states increase housing starts by a certain percentage per year or actually lose out on federal aid. And conversely, they would be given additional federal aid if they exceeded a certain threshold. I imagine that this is a proposal that's going to be taken very seriously. America has a huge jobs housing imbalance that is getting worse, and the housing crisis appears to be deepening. And so even if this proposal, I think he said it would be a 3% increase per year, even if that is not the threshold and there are some kinks that would have to be worked out, it seems like a proposal that's been relatively warmly received by folks in the housing space. So a couple of things there, right? You have some executive priorities in the regulatory space. It seems like the agencies are going to be quite busy as it relates to housing and CRE. Some additional legislative priorities are kind of coming to light here. But only day two of the new administration. It's only, I think, day 15 or 16 of the new Congress. And so really should be exciting to see what transpires in the next few weeks here as President Trump gets his first 100 days underway. But Omar, I know we've got a lot more to talk about in the next few weeks on the podcast. You want to go through some announcements we got?
Absolutely. So next episode is an interview with our first returning guest, Dr. Stephen Buschbaum, who's the co-host of the Tripwire podcast. And he will be rehashing the world of CRE debt in 2024, but also offering some predictions for the year ahead in 2025. But also on our radar are a number of upcoming earnings calls. So earlier this week, or the date of recording on the 21st, we have Prologis. And then on the 23rd, when this episode should be dropping, we have SL Green reporting. On the 28th, we have Alexandria Real Estate Equities. On the 29th, we have BXP. And then on the 30th, we have Blackstone and Weyerhaeuser, the Timber REIT. But then also a number of notable data releases to pay attention to over the following week. On the 28th, we have the FHFA House Price Index and Case-Shiller House Price Index, followed by wholesale inventories and the FOMC interest rate decision by the Fed on the 29th. And then on the 30th, we have GDP and pending home sales data coming out. And on the 31st, the personal consumption and expenditures data being released on the 31st.
Well, excellent. Sounds like we'll have another good episode of macro and data in a couple of weeks here. But Omar, I think that's all we've got for time today. Before we sign off, I did want to encourage people, if you like the show, we would love for you to rate it and leave us some comments on Apple or Spotify. We do read them, so we would encourage you guys to do that. Or feel free to send us an email at altusresearch@altusgroup.com. We'd love to know what topics you'd like covered on the program or guests. So in the meantime, Omar, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to speaking with you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast, powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.